when you encounter that problem popping its head up in your life, hopefully, and you have the awareness to recognize that, you can go down that new path. It's not getting rid of the old program. It's not getting rid of the old pathway. It's just helping you to hopefully be more resilient and resourceful in that situation.
83% of Americans identify as not very happy, which can hold you back and negatively affect your relationships and your business. On this podcast, we discuss the proven steps to happiness so you can restore balance and rekindle your joy.
Welcome to another edition of How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs. Today, we have Paul Norrish from the great country of
Canada.
Paul, welcome today. How are you?
Great. Thank you for having me, Brad.
Good. I hope the weather is as beautiful as it is here. So as always, we like to just jump right in and just get right to the meat. So Paul, we hear so much about mindset in the business world, but is mindset really everything when it comes to changing behavior or breaking through limiting beliefs so that people can get what they want out of life?
Great question. So what I would say is mindset is definitely important. Obviously, mindset's, it's very popular right now. You can see a lot of people talking about mindset. And for me, mindset is about shifting one's perspective, opening new ways of seeing things that perhaps you weren't able to see before. But what I found with many of the people that I've worked with in general, you can just see this when you read people talking about their problems, is that it's one thing to have the proper mindset, but it's another thing to actually feel congruent with that mindset. I think about self-doubt. You can know what you're capable of. You can know what your potential is in some sense. But when it comes to actually taking action, do you feel congruent with taking that action? So when it comes to self-doubt, you can know what you're capable of, but you can also equally not feel capable at the same time. And I feel like it's our emotions that tend to get in the way. And a lot of the times we may be aware of something on the surface. This could be, it could be resistance. It could be a sense of avoidance. It could be worry, fear. These are the things that show up on the surface when there's usually something lurking much deeper. And those are the feelings that maybe we acquired at a certain point in our life that we're seeking to avoid unconsciously. And by unconscious, I just mean outside of our awareness. We probably not fully aware what it is that we're avoiding. We just experience that resistance, that avoidance on the surface. Yeah.
All right. So you just said some really important stuff there in the last 15 seconds that I want you to really dive deep into. But before you do, when we talk about mindset, you know what comes to me, Paul, is the Tony Robbins of the world. And I love Tony Robbins. I'm not bashing him at all. But what I see from most people is they read the Tony Robbins book or they go to the Tony Robbins event, the Unleash Your Power Within or whatever. He's got a bunch of really cool events. And you come back and you're all freaking excited. And you're like, yes, my life is going to be different. And then like 2 days later, you're like, shit, I just had my third glass of wine. Or I just yelled at my kids again. Like, what the heck? I just said I wasn't going to do that. Why, when you have the best intentions or you stand in the mirror and you say, I can make this sales call 50 times, you don't want to make the sales call. Well, you just said it. Let's dive way deeper. What did you mean when you said, oftentimes you believe in the ability to do something, but you can't because of emotions that were formed earlier?
Great question. Absolutely. Yeah. With the Tony Robbins stuff, there's a difference between changing your state. We've all had those days where we feel on top of the world and not much can get in our way, if at all. What I'm talking about here are these older emotions, what I would call incomplete emotions, that pop up in certain types of situations. They're triggered, we could say, and they're uncomfortable. So what do? We try to push them back down, or we try to figure them out, or we use a technique, or we
run,
deep breathe, we meditate. I'm not suggesting those things aren't beneficial. I practice all those things myself. But what is it that's causing this emotion or these collections of emotions to come up over and over again? And how can we move past them so we don't keep bumping up against them? And I think this is what happens. Like you said, you go to a seminar, you do some rah-rah, you feel great. And then you come back home and eventually those old patterns pop up and show their heads again.
So tell us, explain, where are these memories? Where did they come from? And what is it that we're trying to protect when we don't do the thing that we really want to do? Or we want to change our behavior so bad. We want to lose all that weight. But no matter what diet and exercise program we get on, we just can't do it.
Yeah. Well, there's what you're aware of. I make a distinction here. I keep saying on the surface. This is what we're aware of inside of our awareness. There's a lot more going on at a deeper level. So I'll give you an example. I worked with a client who has been working on bringing this project into schools for close to a decade now. And whenever they would get closer to bringing this project into that space, they would get that resistance. They would find themselves making excuses. They would start to sabotage themselves. While before they'd get into that space, they were experiencing the passion, the motivation, everything they needed. So obviously there was a push-pull dynamic going on here. The common saying we hear is the one step forward, the two steps backwards. What ended up happening at a deeper level was there was a significant event that happened to this person when they were in school, when they were much younger, that related to feeling stupid, was the phrase that they used. Now, of course, this person knew mentally, logically, that they are smart, they're capable, but this feeling inside of them would come up. It was a pressure. That's the way that they described it. And put simply, it feels bad to feel bad. Nobody likes to feel bad. And you're going to find ways to avoid feeling bad, even if you're able for a certain period of time to push through those bad feelings. Eventually, it's probably going to find a way to stop you from moving forward because we want to feel good. I totally forgot what your question is, but the last thing I'll say about that is sometimes the things we want to move forward or towards that we desire, which are, yes, associated with good things, can also be linked to bad feelings. And that's where you get that inner conflict.
So you work with clients now to do what?
So in terms of the types of clients I work with high achieving entrepreneurs and what I like to call purpose-driven professionals. And these are people who know what they're capable of doing. They want to move to the next level of success, but they experience that overwhelming self-doubt, the irrational fear, self-sabotage, all that fun stuff. So it's usually a mixture, a combination of a bunch of those different things, because problems like to hold hands with other problems. Problems tend to have many different tenets, but there's always something underneath all of that, what I call an invisible pattern. And once we discover what that is and resolve that, bring it into conscious awareness and release the corresponding emotions, it's amazing to see how much can transform for a person in such a short period of time.
I've seen it too with my clients. The last podcast I did was actually yesterday, and I had a client on, and one of the things they said is, I didn't know how to justify the investment of your course because where's the money going to come? So I was really scared if I should do this. He's like, Brad, do you know since I've started working with you 6 months ago, and he was already a high performer, he says, I've doubled my income. So I've seen it over and over again. So Paul, these high performing entrepreneurs that come to you, do they know? Do any of them know, like, this is the reason I'm having my problem? Or do every single person have this buried subconscious pattern, as you call it, or the hidden pattern that they don't know about?
Great question. I like to make a distinction between conscious insight and unconscious insight. Conscious insight, that's the stuff we can read in books. That's the advice we can get from other people. That's us using our conscious, rational, logical minds to think about a problem, get some good ideas about why it is we might be experiencing what we're experiencing. That's quite different to unconscious insight, which I imagine is something your client experienced working with you, which is, it's something you feel, it's transformational. It may even be, I have this happen quite a bit where someone thinks they've worked through something, but they get a completely new perspective on it. They make a new connection. There's a new aha or an insight that shifts everything. From that point, it's as if they can't go back. The analogy I use is it's like a kid learning that Santa Claus doesn't exist anymore. The kid's not going to go back to believing in Santa Claus. They've got a completely different perspective. And this is what happens, and I'm sure you've experienced this many times before, where your client gets that new perspective, but they also feel a shift and things will never be the same again. Those old programs they're pulled out like a rug beneath your feet.
So tell us about where you touched on it, but I want to go deeper. Where are these old programmings from? Where are these feelings that sidetrack so many of us and cause us to become addicts and workaholics and have shitty marriages? Where are they from? Because I know we weren't born with them.
For sure. So the past, almost always from the past, some point in the past. And there can be an initial event. There can be a collection of events. It's not really important where it comes from, because if you're experiencing it in your day-to-day life, that's the entry point. Our nervous system is inviting us every moment we experience that problem to deal with it. It's just usually we don't know how to deal with it with our conscious mind. But to go back to your question, yes, it's usually things from our past when we're younger and when we tend to be a lot more emotional. And sometimes we experience things, we feel things that either we're not able to feel, or we believe that if we do feel them, there will be consequences. Or it could even be somebody experiences something that truly is a dangerous situation or a traumatic situation, and it's too much for them to handle in that moment. And these feelings get trapped in time, we could say. And also there's the interpretation that the person makes in those moments, so the strategies they develop to deal with those situations that end up carrying forward with them up into adulthood.
So, Paul, can you give us, you can make them up, or you can say from your clients, not the dangerous stuff that's happened, you know, car accidents and wars and stuff like that, because I think most people can relate to those. What are the things that aren't those? Give me 2, 3, 4 examples, if you would, of some situation that might have happened in early childhood that would wreak havoc on our adult life.
I'll give you an interesting example. So I worked with somebody who had a fear of flying. And in short, I'll cut some stuff out, but in short, what it ended up being, so you think the problem is fear, it's anxiety. What it ended up being related to for this person had something to do with authority. It was post 9/11 when the cockpit doors, I guess, are locked now. You can't see the pilots in the cockpit. And something happened to somebody that this person was close with when they were growing up, when they were a child. And it involved them trusting an authority, a doctor in this case. And there was a lot of anger around that. And the issue with flying ended up being that pilots, when you're on a plane, are the authorities and you're trusting their expertise. And this is where this fear was coming up for them. But also there was this underlying anger. That's that invisible pattern. And not only did this fear of flying shift for them, but the way that they were, I think they said they were managing people at work, ended up shifting as well. That's one longer example.
Wow. That's fascinating. Like a doctor doing something is going to cause me 20, 30 years later to not want to fly. And some people are like, well, that's a disorder or something's wrong with that person. No, there's nothing wrong with that person. They're just, their brain is just helping them what they think survive, right?
Yes. Well, because there was probably some hurt there, and hurt doesn't feel good. You want to avoid that in the future. That's the strategy that for whatever reason, the mind created in that moment. Didn't think in that moment, I'm going to create a fear of flying. That was something that was secondary.
Fascinating.
Consequential, but yeah. So it can be something simple that builds. One other example I'll use is you think about the classic example of the kid who stands up in front of the class and maybe they say something wrong and get laughed at by kids and they feel embarrassed. That can be one situation, but now you think that kid is walking to school the next day and they're playing that event in their minds. That's affecting their state. That's affecting the way that they're interacting with people. So problems can build and form a web, but it can relate to very like one or two points in time that have this dramatic effect. And it's when we shift that one point, it can have such a dramatic effect.
Incredible. So I was trying to get you to go back to the childhood because I have a lot of my practices helping people go unearth those things from childhood. And I think, speaking with you in the past, that you don't even do that, that you don't go back. And I know I've talked to many people that are like, you know what? I don't want to work with you, or I'm not ready to work with you because I'm scared of going back and finding out what I might find. Am I right saying that you don't need to like go back and unearth these things that may have happened as a 3-year-old or a 6-year-old, these traumatic events?
The nature of the way I work, if it needs to come up, it will come up. That's one way that it can come up. And obviously, that's a powerful way of helping people to change, is getting that insight. So what I would say is, yes, that's one way that can come up, but it's not the only way it can come up.
Because you and I have been talking a little bit recently offline about coherence therapy and memory reconsolidation. I'm new to it, but I'm fascinated with it. And I have done a deep dive, and I'm going to continue to deep dive. But isn't a lot of memory consolidation necessarily, it's coming up with the experiential, like recreating the experience today and not 30 years ago or 20 years ago?
Yeah. So I want to preface first that I'm definitely not a scientist or an expert in this realm. So this is just based on my experience working one-on-one with people. But this is what I mean by the entry point, is what I would call it. If you have a memory yesterday of experiencing that fear or whatever the problem is that you're sitting in a chair to get help for, that's an entry point, because when the person thinks about that, their nervous system lights up with that old programming, and that's the access point. And that's where we can start to make changes. Yeah. So I would invite anybody to read up on memory reconsolidation, because it's totally fascinating and it's amazing to think about how it will change the whole world of people getting help.
The way I understand it is, up until about 2004, most scientists, neuroscientists, doctors, psychologists, psychiatrists, you name them, thought that once these implicit memories were forged into your brain around emotional times as a child, that you had them. They were literally emblazoned in your brain. Mm. What they found out since in the last 20 years is that that's not the case at all. And that you literally can stir these neurons, get them almost, I'm making this up, almost loose, pull them out, and then put a new. So if your belief is, for me, was I'm not enough based on my childhood, we can actually remove that neuron and put another neuron in that says, no, the truth is you are enough. That to me is fascinating. And I'm thinking, how many psychiatrists, I don't know what the average age in America is as a therapist, but a lot of them weren't even trained in this. So they're still using old techniques, thinking that, you know, we're just going to focus on the symptom and the conscious brain. And that's why therapy and marriage counseling for me and so many people didn't work. And I know you don't do that either. You really focus on what is the core issue and getting the underlying beliefs that we've discussed so far today.
Absolutely. One thing I'd add to that is the old paradigm, we can say, is would be to build a new pathway, to build a new strategy, so that when you encounter that problem popping its head up in your life, hopefully, and you have the awareness to recognize that, you can go down that new path. It's not getting rid of the old program. It's not getting rid of the old pathway. It's just helping you to hopefully be more resilient and resourceful in that situation. What we're talking about here is actually getting rid of the old pathway. And from there, it's not just about building one new strategy. It's about giving a person back choice. It's about giving flexibility. It's about giving them a whole new way to see the world. And that's exciting.
Yeah. So if you're listening and you've been to therapy like I did for 3 decades, and you're still depressed or anxious, or you eat too much, or you've got a shitty marriage, and you're like, I've tried it all. You haven't tried it all unless you went to someone who could do the techniques that we're talking about. So if you're suffering, you don't need to suffer in this world. You deserve to live a joyous life full of happiness and deeply connected relationships. And if you don't have that, stop selling yourself short. Stop living the untruth, because there is a better way. I was that guy for 47 years. I didn't know it. I had no idea. I thought everything was great. But now life is so much different, and you can have the same exact thing. In my case, it was over 3 hours. I'd gone for 30 years and I went and sat down with someone for 3 hours, and boom, my life changed forever. And it's ironic because, I mean, you're going to say the same thing, I think, because I've heard you say this. It's usually in about 3 to 5 hours where we see these massive shifts. And I know I've heard you say you've seen massive shifts in one session, right?
Yes. Yeah. I usually aim for around 1 to 2 sessions. I just want to touch on something with the happiness. First of all, I love that. I love that story. 3 hours. That's amazing. I feel like a lot of people, when they think about happiness, they think about it something they need to acquire. It's out there somewhere, where I imagine you would agree with this. Correct me if that's not the case. I feel like happiness and those resources, those positive things in our life are already there. It's more just like there's other shit in the way. There's all that less than positive stuff in the way. When we start to clear that away, it becomes a lot easier to experience happiness from within. It's already there. It's just a matter of 100%, connecting with it. 100%,
Paul. For 47 years, I chased happiness through big boats and cars and money and women and power, fame, whatever I tried to get my hands on, right? Because I was always looking for it outside of myself. And in that 3 hours, I realized I would be chasing happiness forever. Everything you need to be happy is inside you right now and has always been. You just need to, like Paul said, you've got some filters up because likely you've gone through some pain or some stressful time, or you just made it a stressful time because you were a child and you had to place a meaning on it. So as an adult, you can become aware, and with awareness, you can completely change. So Paul, we hear a lot about motivation, the word motivation and the word discipline. And I have so many clients that come to me and they're like, I just want to be more disciplined. I want to be more motivated. So in your view, what role does motivation play in behavior change? And why do people often struggle to maintain it?
When it comes to a lack of motivation, the interesting thing here is if you want something, if you desire something, if you have a goal, there's motivation there. Otherwise, you wouldn't actively be seeking to move towards that thing. The way I look at it is the conflict is that you're more motivated not to do that thing. Again, that goes back to what we talked about with happiness. Happiness, positive stuff, it's already available. It's the other stuff that's getting in your way. And of course, this is about balance. I'm not talking about be happy all the time or being motivated 110% of the time. It's about having that congruency, getting rid of what's preventing you from accessing the motivation that's already available. What's putting on the brakes while you're putting on the gas? The gas is already there. If you want something, you just need to take your foot off the brakes.
And that's really what you're doing every day for clients, right?
Absolutely. It's about the word I would use is alignment, congruency. It's about bringing what you consciously want into alignment with what you unconsciously want, which is sometimes in conflict with what you want.
Yeah. And by the way, the incongruency between what the unconscious and the conscious wants isn't just for high performing entrepreneurs that Paul works with. What he just said is the reason for pretty much every single problem in this world, from divorces to bad marriages to obesity to addiction, depression, anxiety. It's all the same story, right, Paul?
Absolutely. It's interesting when we form problems, typically when we're younger, we also will create goals from that too. I've worked with people where their whole motivation becomes, I'll give you an example. Someone who's younger, they have a teacher that embarrasses them. I've used this example earlier. And they decide in that moment, I'm not stupid. I'm going to prove to the world that I'm smart. And then they spend the next couple of decades doing everything to prove that to everybody. That becomes their new goal. That's what they're motivated towards. But this isn't away from strategy. They're actually just trying to prove to themselves that they're not stupid. So motivation, sometimes what we think we want isn't actually what we want. And it could simply be a matter of clarity as well, getting clear on, is this something that you truly want? Because maybe that's where the issue with motivation can be sometimes too.
So here's a theory that I'm developing, and you are absolutely welcome to shoot it down and say, no, I don't agree with you. But I think a lot of these, we're just going to use symptoms as a lack of a better word, symptoms. And the symptoms is the person who couldn't grow their business, or the person who was scared of flying, the person who drinks a lot of wine, the person that fights all the time with their coworkers or their spouse. I think that it all goes back to not only the unconscious thoughts that are developed in early childhood, but I think it has to do with something around survival. I literally think our unconscious brain is, when someone says something to you as a 46-year-old adult and you get really, really triggered, I believe it's something in your brain saying, this is dangerous and you might die here. Do you understand what I'm saying? And do you buy that, or do you think I'm off here?
With survival, when is that established?
Well, in childhood. So, you know, the Gabor Mate talks about every kid has the need for attachment and authenticity. We always, or we almost always, give up authenticity because if we gave up attachment, we would die. So we change who we are because our parents can't handle our emotions because they didn't know that as a child. So we're looking at, oh my gosh, I can't give up this attachment or I'll die. That's what I mean as an adult when you have these bad feelings. I think it's your brain saying there's danger and not literally you're going to die, but your six-year-old or your two-year-old self is saying, this is a situation where I remember, oh my gosh, my life might be in peril here.
Yeah, I like that. It reminds me of whether or not this, I don't know if this is actually true. I remember hearing somewhere that at a certain age, when you're playing peekaboo with a child, it's as if you literally disappear for them.
Wow.
Because of, based on their development. Whether or not that's true, we can use that as a metaphor for what you said. For a child, it may, whether or not it's true, feel to them that they could die. It comes down to survival. I think I've also heard that every fear, if you were to bring it down to its core, has to do with survival.
Survival.
So I imagine that makes sense. We're biological beings. It's important to be alive. So,
all right. Sounds like I'm on the right track then.
There's definitely something. There's probably a connection there.
So you and I have talked about useful and not useful emotions, right? Could you elaborate on the distinction and discuss how emotions serve a purpose in our personal and professional lives?
For sure. This is my personal belief. I believe that emotions do serve a purpose. If you experience loss, if you lose somebody you love or something you love, it makes sense to feel sadness. If you are in a dangerous situation where your survival is in question, it makes sense to feel some level of fear. That fear is going to serve you. It's going to activate. It's going to help you hopefully get out of that situation. Where emotions aren't beneficial or get in our way is when we find ourselves in situations. There's certain emotions that come up, but they don't belong there. It's our mind's interpretation of what's happening versus what actually is happening. And most people are cognizant of this. You take a person with a phobia. Most people with a phobia recognize that their response is irrational, and yet that response is still coming up. That's the stuff that we want to get out of the way. That, though, is much more apparent to people than, as you mentioned earlier, there's certain patterns that we're not even aware are holding us back or may not be aware are holding us back. That once we get clarity around that, makes shifts and open things up that probably couldn't even imagine were possible.
So that's great stuff. Earlier, you said that you often help your clients in 1 to 2 sessions. Now, someone's listening to this right now, and they're like, just like, hey, I'm like Brad. I've been in therapy for 30 years. This guy can really help me in 1 to 2 sessions. Like, I'm calling BS on that. No way. So tell us, what do you do that's different from Susie therapist who wants the person to come in every Tuesday and sit on the couch for the next 20 years? What do you do? And then for the icing on the cake, tell us, give us a real example of a client that came to you where it was a really great one, where in 1 to 2 sessions, this person's life changed profoundly. Because I know it's possible, but I want to hear you explain that to the people who are like doubting this.
Absolutely. The analogy I use is if you want to take a building down, you can take it down one brick at a time, or you can blow out the foundation. What we're looking for is the foundation here. And that's something I'm very good at. The story we tell ourselves about the problem we have, or the story we tell other people, it's readily available. It's on the tip of our tongue. It's something that we're aware of. But again, that's only what we're aware of. There are aspects to a problem that are outside of your awareness that are, we could say, at the root cause of what's causing you to experience what you're experiencing. And when we get to the root, when we make changes there, that's where everything falls apart. So if you think about a web that goes outwards, has all these different components, we want to find that point in that web where if you break that, the rest of it collapses. There's many different aspects of a problem, and they're all leaning upon usually one or two things. And when we find what that is, and we make that small shift, then everything else falls apart. Does that make sense?
It does. I'm curious, why don't more people do this? People as in the healers.
Why are people who are helping other people to change don't do it?
Yeah.
That's a great question. I don't know if I have the answer.
Yeah. Okay. So you got to give us a case study. You give us the best example ever where someone came to you and major need in one or two sessions. It's just like, they're like, are you kidding me? This is incredible.
So I had somebody who came to me for, they were dealing with imposter syndrome when it came to, I think it was like around a transition in their career and deciding whether or not, getting clarity around what it was that they wanted to do. And it turned out that it all came back to this fear around change, this fear around transition that they had experienced when they were younger. I'm not going to go into detail because I want to maintain client confidentiality, but this insight in and of itself didn't just help this person in terms of their career transition. It radically transformed their sense of confidence, their core confidence. And it also completely transformed the relationships that they had with their family and even in their love life. Because this, you got to think, if you have this fear, this discomfort around change, just imagine how many different things in your life that's going to impact. And that goes back to what you were asking earlier, is how can you shift so many things or so much in just one or two sessions? Well, that's a perfect example. That discomfort around change alone is going to impact so many things in somebody's life. And when that feeling disappears, everything else shifts with it. So,
yeah, amazing stuff. So the gentleman I spoke about that was on the podcast yesterday, my client, he didn't come to me to make more money. He came to me because he had a racing mind or had some overwhelm. And the byproduct was money, better relationship with his son, better relationship with his wife. So yeah, when you get that, like you said, the foundation, everything else falls. So if you're listening to this and you're like, huh, I wonder if I have limiting beliefs that are holding me back, you can find out in 3 minutes. You just have to go to bradchandler.com/quiz, take my self-love quiz, and this will likely show if you've got these limiting beliefs. So, Paul, how can people reach you? What's the best way to get a hold of you?
So the best way to reach me is through my website, www.paulnourish.online. And that's where you'll find me. You can also find me on social media at paulnourishonline. And I'd love for anybody to reach out, have a conversation, chat about anything you found interesting.
Yeah. So in closing, I know your background. I'm super impressed with it. That's why you're on the show. You've just got the knowledge you've got, and some of the people that you've worked closely with are pretty special people. So what have I not asked you, or what do you think it's important for the listeners to hear that could radically or profoundly change their lives in a good way?
I don't know if this is the right question, but probably, why am I so obsessed with what I do and learning all of this stuff? I think for me, and I imagine you too, when you see what's possible in the realm of change, it lights something up inside of me. And it's also super important work in terms of, if we can work on our emotional well-being, our mental well-being, that doesn't just make a shift in our world, in our landscape, but it creates a ripple effect out into everybody else's lives, the people around us. So I'm just overjoyed with what this is all about. It feels like true magic to me. And I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Yeah, but no, Paul, why are you here doing this work?
In terms of why I'm doing this?
Yeah. What got you here? What's your story?
So in terms of my story, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but I grew up with some challenges in terms of dealing with anxiety, with my mental health, and not being able to find these solutions that I was hoping to find. And it started me on this journey. For some reason, I do not know why, I always had this deep felt belief that change can happen in a short period of time. And that was never out of the question for me. And it started me down this ongoing path, this ongoing obsession mixed with passion to exploring how to do that in the best possible way and how to help as many people as I can benefit.
Awesome. Well, thanks for the work that you're doing and helping change people, change the world one person at a time. So if you want to reach out to Paul, again, it's paulnourish.online. And Paul, thanks for being on the show. That was awesome.
Appreciate it, Brad. Thank you so much for having me.
As always, guys, I'm trying to help a million people here. I got 60 years left. At least that's what I'm manifesting. And so if you can help me share this message, whether just sharing it, just telling someone about the podcast or sharing the episode or rating it, reviewing it, anything you'd like to do to help me on this mission to help people find the freedom and happiness that myself and Paul were able to find, please help me. And I really appreciate it. That concludes another episode of How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs. And remember, love heals all.
Hit subscribe if you don't want to miss out on more life-changing content. And if you're struggling, you don't have to. Go to bradchandler.com/contact. There, you can join the Facebook community of like-minded entrepreneurs, and you'll see a button to schedule your freedom and happiness call. See you on the next episode.